The dress had always been her armor. Cora had chosen it carefully that morning, the heavy linen the color of storm clouds, the kind that fell in thick folds from shoulder to ankle and asked no questions. She had smoothed it over her ribs with practiced hands, pulling the fabric straight, making sure nothing showed. Nothing that mattered anyway. She had done this so many times that the movements felt as natural as breathing, and just as necessary. The great hall of Stonvale Keep smelled of pine resin and old smoke. Torches guttered in iron brackets along the walls, throwing amber light across the faces of the assembled pack. Warriors in leather and fur, elders in woolen robes, advisors who wore their authority like a second skin. They had all gathered for the same reason. The Alpha King had called a gathering of the border territories, and when Tristan Kale summoned, every soul within three mountain ranges came. Cora stood near the back of the hall, half hidden behind a broad stone column. She was not supposed to be here at all. She was an Omega from the Ashven settlement, a small, forgettable cluster of dwellings pressed against the base of the northern ridge. And Omegas from Ashven did not attend royal gatherings. They sent their pack leaders. They sent their elders. They did not send a 23-year-old woman with a braid coming loose at the end, and boots that had cracked along the left heel sometime in the autumn and never been properly mended. But Elder Davin had taken ill 3 days ago, and the messenger had already been sent, and someone had to carry the border reports. Someone had to place the sealed documents into the hands of the Royal Council before the morning session closed. That someone, apparently, was Cora. She pressed her back against the cold stone of the column and watched the hall fill. The men and women around her moved with the easy confidence of those who belonged, who had always belonged, to places like this. Their cloaks were dyed deep burgundy and forest green. Their boots were whole. They spoke to one another in low, assured voices, and none of them held a leather satchel against their chest, like it was the only thing keeping them upright. Cora's fingers tightened on the strap. The reports. She just needed to deliver the reports, step back into the corridor, find her horse, and begin the 3-hour ride back to Ashven before dark caught her on the ridge road. That was all. That was the whole of it. A horn sounded from somewhere above. A single, resonant note that dropped every voice in the hall to silence. He entered from the far end. Cora had heard stories about Tristan Kale the way people heard stories about winter storms or ancient mountains, as things that existed at a great remove, powerful and indifferent, and not particularly concerned with the lives of people like her. She had heard that he was tall. She had heard that his hair was braided back in the old warrior style, dark as crow feathers. She had heard that the scar across his jaw had come from a blade in his 14th year, and that he had never once spoken of it. None of the stories had prepared her for the way the room changed when he walked into it. It was not precisely his size, though he was broad across the shoulders in a way that made the other large men in the hall seem somehow diminished. It was not the black fur mantle that hung from his frame, or the leather armor crossing his chest in thick straps buckled with dark iron, or even the pale, watchful quality of his eyes, blue as glacier ice and just as still. It was the silence he carried with him, the absolute, unquestioning quiet that spread outward from his presence like ripples from a stone dropped in deep water. Every person in that hall felt it. Every person straightened, stilled, recalibrated. Cora pressed harder against the column. He did not look at her. Of course he did not. He moved to the head of the long oak table and stood with his hands braced against its edge, and Counselor Vreth began speaking in a voice designed to carry, and the morning session was officially underway. This was her moment. While every eye tracked the counselor's gestures and the maps being unrolled across the table, Cora could slip to the edge of the hall, find someone, anyone, with enough rank to receive the Ashven documents, hand them over, and disappear. She pushed away from the column and began to move. She had taken perhaps 6 steps when her left boot caught on an uneven flagstone. The crack in the heel, the one that had never been properly mended, chose that exact moment to give way entirely. Her ankle turned. The satchel swung wide. She caught herself against the shoulder of a startled elder, who made a sharp sound of surprise, and the entire near half of the hall turned to look. The silence that followed was of a different quality than the one Tristan Cale carried with him. This one had edges. "Who is that?" someone murmured. Cora straightened. Her ankle throbbed. Her face was hot. She gripped the satchel strap and lifted her chin and told herself, very firmly, that she was not going to make this worse. "I carry documents from the Ashven settlement," she said, and her voice came out steadier than she deserved. "Border reports for the council. Elder Davin is ill. I was sent in his place." A ripple of reaction moved through the nearest group. Not unkind, exactly, but not particularly warm either. An Omega, delivering reports. Alone. The arithmetic of it was obvious to everyone present. "Step forward." The voice came from the head of the table. Cora looked up. Tristan Cale was watching her. Not the way the others were watching her, with mild curiosity or faint condescension, but with something she could not immediately name, direct, thorough, as if he were reading a page rather than looking at a person. She stepped forward. The walk from the column to the head of the table was perhaps 30 feet. It felt considerably longer. Her broken boot scraped quietly against the stone with every other step, and she could feel the uneven gait it forced on her, the slight hitch in her movement that she could not fully disguise. She was usually better at disguising it. The cold always made it worse. She stopped before him and placed the satchel on the table. "The Ashven winter boundary reports, my lord. Livestock counts, patrol records, and 2 flags for potential incursion along the eastern ridge. Elder Davin sends his apologies for his absence." Tristan Cale did not reach for the satchel. He was still watching her. Those glacier-pale eyes moved once from her face downward, not with any quality of rudeness, but with the sharp, involuntary attention of someone who had noticed something and could not quite stop themselves from confirming it. Cora's hand moved instinctively to the side of her dress, smoothing the fabric, pressing it flat. The gesture was so automatic she barely registered it. But he did. She saw it in the slight change around his eyes. Not pity, not yet, not quite. Something more careful than that. A recognition. As if he had seen someone hold a wound closed with their own hand before, and knew exactly what that looked like. "What is your name?" he asked. "Cora, of Ashven. How long have you been riding?" The question surprised her. "Since before dawn, my lord." "And the road from Ashven in winter?" "Is passable," she said, a fraction too quickly. "The ridge road is narrow, but the ice had not set when I left. I expect to make the return before Vreth." He spoke without raising his voice, but the counselor stopped mid-sentence across the table. "Delay the eastern boundary discussion by 1 hour." He straightened from the table and looked at Cora again with that same careful, unreadable quality. "You will rest here before you ride back." It was not a question. Cora opened her mouth to decline. She had the words ready, the polite, practiced refusal that she had used so many times in so many versions. But something in his expression stopped her. Not authority. Not the weight of his rank pressing down on her like a hand between the shoulders. Something else. Something quieter. "He knows," she thought. And the thought frightened her more than the long ride had. More than the broken boot and the crowded hall and the 30 feet of stone floor she had just crossed under 100 watchful eyes. He saw. She did not know what to do with that. She had spent 4 years making sure no one ever saw. They gave her a room off the eastern corridor. Small, stone-walled, with a narrow window that looked out over the keep's inner courtyard. A fire had already been lit in the hearth, and whoever had prepared the space had left a wooden tray on the table beside it, dark bread, a wedge of hard cheese, a clay cup of something that steamed faintly and smelled of pine bark and dried herbs. Cora stood in the doorway for a moment before entering. She was not accustomed to rooms prepared for her. In Ashvin, she slept in the back portion of the elders' hall, behind a curtain of rough wool, on a pallet that she rolled up each morning before anyone else was awake. She ate what was left after the others had eaten. She did not complain about this. It was simply the shape of her life, the way the ridge road was narrow and the winters were long. Facts that existed without requiring her opinion. She closed the door behind her, set the empty satchel beside it, and lowered herself carefully into the chair nearest the fire. The warmth hit her like something solid. She had not realized how cold she was. The ride from Ashvin had been 3 hours through air that tasted of iron and coming snow. Her cloak pulled tight, and her breath clouding white before her face, and she had spent all of it focused on the road, and the documents, and the precise, rehearsed speech she had prepared for the council. There had been no space for cold. Now, in the quiet of the small room with the fire pushing heat against her hands and face, the cold rushed in all at once, or rather, rushed out, leaving behind an ache she recognized. She reached down and unlaced her broken boot with careful fingers. The left boot came off, and she set it aside and looked at her ankle. It had swollen slightly at the joint, purpled at the outer edge. Not broken. She had broken things before and knew the difference. This was a bad twist, the kind that would tighten overnight and loosen again in a day or two. Provided she kept off it, she would not be able to keep off it. The ride home still waited. She pulled her foot up onto the edge of the chair and pressed her thumb against the bruised joint, assessing. Then she smoothed her dress back down over her leg and reached for the cup on the tray and drank. And the herb tea was bitter and warm, and she was grateful for it in a way she did not entirely have words for. A knock came at the door. "Come in," she said, and set the cup down. The woman who entered was perhaps 50, with iron-gray hair pulled back severely and the kind of posture that came from decades of knowing exactly where she stood in every room she entered. She wore a dark green apron over her dress and carried a small wooden box under one arm. Her eyes moved to Cora's bare foot on the chair immediately, and her expression did not change, but something in it sharpened. "Myron," the woman said, by way of introduction. "I manage the keep's healers. The Alpha King sent me." Cora straightened. "That isn't necessary. It's only a twist." "He said you'd say that." Marin crossed the room without ceremony and set the wooden box on the table beside the tray, opened it, and began laying out small cloth pouches and a roll of linen bandage. "He also said to tell you that no one leaves Stonvale with an untreated injury if he can prevent it." Those were his exact words, more or less. Cora stared at the woman's back. "He sent you specifically." "He did." "Because of my ankle." "Because of your ankle, yes." Marin turned, and her gaze was direct and entirely free of sentiment. "May I?" There was a pause. Then Cora moved her foot down from the chair edge and extended it toward the healer, because arguing with someone who carried that particular quality of certainty was a thing that required energy she did not currently have. Marin's hands were efficient and impersonal. She probed the joint, confirmed nothing was broken, applied a poultice that smelled of comfrey and cold clay, and began wrapping the linen with practiced turns. She did not speak while she worked, and Cora did not speak either, and the fire crackled between them, and the snow that had threatened all morning finally arrived, tapping quietly against the window glass. "You rode from Ashvin alone," Marin said eventually. It was not quite a question. "Yes, in this weather." "The weather was not so bad when I left." Marin tied off the bandage. "The elder couldn't send anyone with you?" Cora looked at the fire. "There wasn't anyone to send." "That was not entirely true. There were men in Ashvin who could have ridden the report. 3 of them, at least, who were able-bodied and unoccupied. But Elder Davin had been ill, and in the confusion of preparing the documents and finding the satchel and saddling her horse, no one had thought to organize an escort. Or perhaps they had thought of it and decided it was not worth the effort. She could not always tell the difference, and she had stopped trying to determine it some time ago. Maren looked at her for a moment with eyes that had clearly seen a great many things in 50 years, then began packing her supplies back into the wooden box. "There is water in the basin if you want to wash before you rest," she said. "The bread is from this morning. The cheese keeps." "Thank you," Cora said. "You can tell the Alpha King that his concern was..." "You can tell him yourself," Maren said pleasantly, and closed her box, and left. Cora looked at the closed door for a long moment. She ate the bread and most of the cheese. She drank the rest of the herb tea. Outside the window, the snow fell in slow, heavy curtains across the gray stones of the courtyard, and two guards crossed below with their heads down and their cloaks wrapped tight. The fire burned low, and she did not add wood to it, because she did not want to seem as though she were settling in, making herself comfortable in a place that was not hers. She was not supposed to be here. She had delivered the reports. She should go. Her wrapped ankle disagreed. She was still debating this when another knock came, and this one was different, heavier, less apologetic, the knock of someone who was used to doors opening for them rather than waiting to be invited. She knew before she spoke. "Come in." Tristan Kale filled the doorway, the way large men sometimes filled spaces, not aggressively, but completely, as if the room rearranged itself slightly around him. He had removed the fur mantle, but still wore the leather armor with its crossed straps and iron buckles. And there was a scroll in his left hand that he set against the doorframe as he looked at her. His eyes went to the bandaged ankle, then to her face. "Maren said it was a bad twist," he said. "It will mend." She looked at her hands in her lap. "Thank you for sending her. It wasn't necessary, but I... thank you." He was quiet for a moment. Then he came into the room, not rushing, and pulled the second chair away from the wall and set it near the fire across from her and sat down and opened the scroll across his knee. "I read the Ashvin report on the Eastern Ridge," he said. She looked up. "The incursion flags." He turned the scroll slightly, as though she might see the writing from where she sat. "Your hand?" "Yes." "The detail here is exceptional. The patrol routes, the timestamps, the snow depth measurements." He looked up from the scroll. "This is not the work of someone who compiled reports from other people's notes. You walked those routes yourself." It was not a question either. He seemed to prefer that, stating the thing he knew to be true, and waiting to see if she would confirm it or correct it. "Most of them," she said. "In winter. The ridge is difficult to read in other seasons. The markers shift." He studied her for a moment. In the firelight, the scar along his jaw was more visible, a thin old line that curved from below his left cheekbone toward his chin. It had healed clean, the way old wounds sometimes did. It did not make him look dangerous. It made him look like someone who had survived something and continued anyway. "The Eastern Ridge flags," he said. "If you're right, and I believe you are, there is movement along that boundary that the Council has been dismissing for 2 seasons. Your documentation is the first I've seen that gives it weight." Cora said nothing. "Your elder," he continued. "Elder Davin. How long has he been sending these reports?"
7 years. He took over from his predecessor.
"And how long have you been writing them?"
A pause. Longer than she intended.
4 years, she said. Something moved across his expression, there and gone, brief as a shadow. "And they've been sent under Davin's name." It was not a question. She did not confirm it. He looked at the scroll again. Then he rolled it closed with careful hands and set it across his knee, and looked at her with those pale, unhurried eyes, and said something she was entirely unprepared for. "Who hurt you, Cora of Ashvin?" The fire crackled. Outside, the snow fell and fell and fell. She felt the answer rise in her chest like water rising in a sealed room.
pressing outward, looking for any gap. And she pressed her hand flat against the side of her dress, exactly as she had done in the great hall, and said nothing. But her hand had answered for her, and they both knew it. She did not answer him that night. He did not press her. That surprised her more than the question itself. She had expected the weight of his authority to follow the words, the particular pressure that powerful men applied when they wanted something, and had never been taught that wanting was not the same as deserving. But Tristan Cail simply looked at her for a moment after she said nothing, and then he nodded. Once, as if she had given him an answer he already understood, and rose from the chair. "The snow will not clear before morning," he said, rolling the scroll closed and tucking it under his arm. "You'll stay the night. Marin will see that you have everything you need." "I can't impose." "You are not imposing." He said it quietly, without heat, without the edge of command. Just a fact, stated plainly, the way he seemed to prefer stating things. The ridge road in a snowstorm at dusk is not a road. It is a way to die. He left before she could find another protest. Cora sat with the fire for a long time after the door closed. She listened to the snow against the window and the distant sounds of the keep settling into its evening rhythms. Boots on stone corridors, the muffled call of a guard change, the low resonance of voices somewhere down the hall. Ordinary sounds. The sounds of a place that functioned, that had structure and warmth and people who knew their place within it. She thought about his question. "Who hurt you?" 4 years. 4 years she had been writing those reports, folding them into Elder Davin's official correspondence, watching them go out under a seal that was not hers, and return, when they returned at all, with responses addressed to a name that was not hers. 4 years of walking the eastern ridge in all weather, counting livestock and measuring snowpack, and documenting the small, accumulating signs of something moving along the boundary that no one else seemed to want to see. 4 years. And not once had anyone asked whose hand had written those careful, detailed pages. Not until today. She pulled her braid over her shoulder and began working loose the tie at the end, something to do with her hands, and stared at the fire and tried to decide what Tristan Cale's attention meant, whether it was a kindness or a complication, whether a man with that much power noticing her was a thing to be grateful for or afraid of. She had learned, over the years, that those two things were not always different. Morning came gray and cold, the snow having stopped sometime before dawn and left the courtyard below her window coated in white silence. Cora's ankle was stiff but manageable. She rewrapped the linen herself, pulled on her boot, the broken one, carefully, testing the heel's willingness to hold, and gathered her cloak and the empty satchel and prepared to be invisible. She did not make it past the corridor. The man leaning against the wall opposite her door was perhaps 30, lean in the way that suggested speed rather than strength, with a soldier's posture and an expression that managed to combine professional alertness with something that looked very much like personal suspicion. He had dark skin and close-cropped hair, and arms crossed over his chest and eyes that assessed her the moment she stepped out of the room with the specific efficiency of someone whose entire occupation involved assessing people. "You're the Omega from Ashven," he said. "Not unkindly." "Not kindly either." "I'm Cora," she said. "From Ashven." "Yes." "Soren." He pushed off the wall. "I'm the Alpha King's second. He asked me to see you to the hall before you leave. There's a morning meal." She looked at him steadily. "And if I said I'd rather leave directly?" "I'd say the Alpha King anticipated that possibility and asked me to be persuasive." He tilted his head. "I'm not especially persuasive as it happens, but I can be persistent." She almost smiled. "Almost." "Fine." He walked beside her down the corridor toward the main hall, and she noted that he matched his pace to her uneven one without comment, which was either very polite or very pointed. She could not tell which. "You wrote the Ashven reports," he said, when they had gone perhaps halfway. She glanced at him.
Tristan told me, Soren said.
He had the careful tone of someone choosing their words with particular attention. He also told me about the Eastern Ridge flags. I've been his second for 6 years. I read every border report that comes through this keep. A pause. I should have recognized the difference in quality 2 seasons ago. Elder Davin's name is on the documents. Elder Davin's name, Soren said evenly, is on documents that describe terrain he has not personally walked in at least 3 years, based on his age and the detail of the records before yours. He looked straight ahead. I should have noticed. I didn't. Cora said nothing. That's not a thing I say easily, he added. I want you to know that. They reached the hall. The morning session had not yet begun, and the long oak table was set with bread and cold meat and clay pitchers of water and warm grain, and several of the counselors and warriors were already seated and eating with the easy, unself-conscious appetite of people who had never wondered whether there would be enough. Tristan Kale was standing at the far end of the table with a map weighted open by 2 iron candlesticks. He was speaking to a woman Cora did not recognize. Gray-haired, sharp-featured, dressed in the dark robes of a senior council elder, with a silver chain at her collar. The woman was speaking quickly and quietly, with the intense focus of someone delivering a warning. And Tristan was listening with his eyes on the map and the particular stillness of a man who was hearing what was being said and forming his own separate conclusions about it. He looked up when Cora entered. The gray-haired woman followed his gaze. Her eyes found Cora and stayed there for a moment with an expression that was impossible to read at this distance. Measuring, perhaps. Or calculating. Then she looked back at Tristan and said something else, something short. And he responded without looking at her again. And she drew herself straight and walked away from the table toward the corridor with the brisk certainty of someone who had made a decision. Soren guided Cora to a seat near the middle of the table and poured her water without being asked, and sat down across from her with his own cup, and said, That's Counselor Vessa. She's been on the High Council for 20 years. What was she saying to him? Soren picked up a piece of bread. I don't know yet, he said, in a tone that suggested he intended to find out. Eat. Cora ate. The bread was warm, and the grain was thick with dried fruit, and the water had something clean and cold about it that tasted faintly of mountain stone. She ate with the focused, grateful attention of someone who did not take warm food for granted and tried not to think about the gray-haired woman's eyes on her or what Tristan Kale's expression had been when he'd looked up and found her in the doorway. She was nearly finished when the commotion started. It came from the corridor, raised voices, the distinctive sharp sound of an argument being conducted in furious whispers that had gotten too large for whispers. Everyone at the table looked up. 2 of the warriors rose from their seats. Then the doors at the far end of the hall swung open, and a man walked in who made the air in the room change in a different way than Tristan's presence did, not with authority, but with something that sat in the chest like an unpleasant smell, something wrong and familiar at the same time. He was perhaps 55, heavy-set, wearing the dark blue riding cloak of the Ashven settlement's pack leader insignia, the silver thread border that Elder Davin wore, or had worn, before his illness. His face was broad and florid, and currently arranged into an expression of righteous urgency. Cora's stomach dropped. His name was Hadrick. He was Elder Davin's eldest son, and he had been managing Ashvin's internal affairs during his father's illness, and he had made it very clear in the 3 days since his father had fallen ill exactly what he thought of the various arrangements his father had made over the years, including the arrangement that had allowed Cora to continue living in the Elder's Hall and conducting the pack's administrative work in exchange for a corner behind a wool curtain and meals from what was left. He had not known she had been sent to Stonvale. He knew now. His eyes found her across the hall with the immediate, unhesitating aim of someone who had been looking. There she is. His voice carried. It was designed to carry. That woman has no authority to represent Ashven. Whatever she has told you, whatever documents she has delivered, they are not sanctioned. I am the acting head of Ashven Settlement, and I was not consulted. The hall was very quiet. Cora sat still. Her hands were flat on the table. She could feel the eyes of every person in the room, and she kept her own gaze level and her breathing even, and did not reach for the side of her dress. Tristan Cale set down the edge of the map he had been holding. He straightened to his full height and looked at Haydrick with the unhurried calm of someone who had dealt with men like this before and found the experience neither surprising nor particularly difficult. "The documents she delivered," he said, "bear Elder Davin's official seal." "My father is ill," Haydrick said, advancing toward the table. "He did not sanction this errand. She took it upon herself. She takes things upon herself frequently. It is a pattern of behavior I intend to correct." The last four words landed in the room like stones dropped into still water. Cora heard them. She felt them. And across the table she saw Soren go very still in the particular way of a man who had just understood something and was deciding what to do with it. Tristan did not move. That was the thing Cora noticed first. The absolute stillness of him. The way he stood at the head of the table with his hands braced against the oak edge and his eyes on Haydrick, and nothing in his posture suggesting that anything in the room had the power to disturb him. Men who had grown up with authority often used volume or movement to demonstrate it. Tristan Cale used neither. He simply was, and the room arranged itself around that fact. "A pattern of behavior," he repeated, and his voice was exactly the same as it always was, measured, unhurried, clear. "Describe it." Haydrick had clearly expected a different reception. He had swept into the hall with the momentum of a man who anticipated yielding space and had not quite prepared for the wall he'd found instead. He recovered quickly, adjusting his posture, spreading his hands in a gesture meant to suggest reasonableness. "She is an Omega without rank or standing in Ashvin," he said. "My father, in his generosity, allowed her a place in the settlement. She assists with records, administrative tasks. She has no authority to ride to Stonvale, to speak before the council, to represent—" "She didn't speak before the council," Soren said from his seat, and his voice was pleasant in the specific way of someone who had sharpened their pleasantness into something useful. "She delivered documents bearing a valid seal, precisely as a messenger would." Haydrick's gaze slid to Soren with barely concealed irritation. "She is not a messenger. She is—" "What is she?" Tristan asked. The question was simple. The silence that followed it was not. Haydrick's mouth opened and closed once. He was recalculating. Cora could see it. Reading the room the way a man reads a road for hidden ice. Too late. Already on it. Trying to find the safest path forward. "She is under my father's protection," he said finally, and the word protection came out with an undertone that everyone in the hall with any sense could hear, the kind of protection that required the protected party to stay exactly where they were told, and do exactly what they were told, and not ride to royal keeps without permission. "I see," Tristan said. He looked at Cora then. Not a long look, not dramatic, just a brief direct glance that lasted perhaps 2 seconds, and contained within it a question he did not ask aloud. She gave him nothing. She sat with her hands flat on the table, and her back straight, and her face as still as she could make it, because showing anything right now, fear, anger, the hot, ashamed relief of having someone look at Haydrick the way Tristan was looking at him, would cost her more than she was prepared to pay in front of this many people. Tristan looked back at Haydrick. "The documents she delivered," he said, "contain intelligence on the Eastern Ridge that this council has needed for 2 seasons. The work is meticulous. It reflects direct field knowledge of the Ashvin territory that is, frankly, unmatched by any report we have received from any settlement along the northern boundary in recent memory." He paused. "I will not be dismissing it, because the woman who gathered it does not have a title you consider sufficient." Haydrick's face had gone a particular shade of dark red. "The Alpha King's confidence is noted. However, the internal affairs of Ashvin's settlement are—" "Are a matter I will take up with Elder Davin directly," Tristan said, "when he recovers." He straightened fully from the table. "In the meantime, Cora of Ashven is a guest of this keep until the road is clear enough to travel safely. She is to be treated accordingly." He picked up the map, rolled it closed, and handed it to an aide who materialized at his elbow, and turned to continue the business of the morning as though Haedric were a draft that had blown through the hall and now resolved itself. Haedric stood for a moment in the particular stillness of a man being publicly diminished who does not yet know what to do about it. Then he turned. And as he turned, his eyes found Cora again, and what was in them was not anger. Anger she could have managed. It was the quiet, patient expression of someone making a note. He left. The hall breathed. Soren found her an hour later in the corridor outside the eastern room, standing at the window that overlooked the courtyard, watching two stable hands clear snow from the stone troughs with long-handled wooden scrapers. She had needed to stand up. She had needed to be somewhere she could see a horizon, even a small one. "He'll retaliate," she said, before Soren could speak. "Probably," Soren said, coming to stand beside her. He looked out the window. "Not here. Not while you're under Tristan's roof. But when you go back." "I know." "Then don't go back." She turned to look at him. He was watching the stable hands with the same even expression he seemed to apply to most things, but there was something underneath it. A tension in his jaw. The way his arms were crossed just slightly tighter than they needed to be. "Ashven is my home," she said. "Ashven," Soren said carefully, "is a place where a woman who has been writing meticulous, accurate, genuinely important border reports for 4 years is living behind a curtain in a corner and eating whatever is left." He glanced at her. "That's not a home. That's a situation." She looked back out the window. "How do you know about the curtain?" she said. "Tristan asked me to find out about your living arrangements this morning." A pause. "I sent a rider to Ashven at first light. He spoke with a woman there, a healer named Bryn," she told him. Cora closed her eyes for a moment. Bryn. Of course. Bryn was the only person in Ashven who had ever looked directly at her and said, plainly, that things were not right. Bryn, who left food outside the curtain when the evening portions ran thin. Bryn, who had wrapped Cora's ribs 2 winters ago when she'd fallen on the ridge ice. Or said she'd fallen, and Bryn had wrapped the injury without asking questions, which at the time Cora had been grateful for. She was not sure she was grateful anymore. "She told him other things, too," Soren said quietly. The courtyard was very white and very still. "What things?" Cora said. It came out flat. That the fall 2 winters ago was not a fall. The words dropped into the silence between them and stayed there. Cora kept her eyes on the courtyard. She kept her breathing even. She pressed her hand flat against the side of her dress. Then she felt it, the awareness of what she had just done, the gesture she could not seem to stop making. She looked down at her own hand, pressed against the fabric, and something in her chest that had been clenched for a very long time pulled tighter. "Cora." Tristan's voice came from behind her. She had not heard him approach. She turned. He was standing in the corridor with a stillness that was different from before. Not the stillness of authority or of a man conducting the business of his keep, but the stillness of someone holding themselves very carefully in check. His eyes were on her hand, still pressed against her side, and his face had the particular quality of controlled restraint that she recognized now as the way he looked when he was feeling something significant and had decided not to impose it on the room. "I owe you no explanation," she said. The words came out before she chose them. "No," he agreed. "You don't. Whatever Bryn told your writer is not why I'm here." He looked at her steadily. "I'm here because Haedric arrived this morning with two of his men, and they are currently in the western courtyard, and they intend to ride back to Ashvin before the road fully clears, and they intend to take you with them. She stared at him. He has no authority to compel you to leave, Tristan said. Not while you are here. But I wanted you to know before you walked into the courtyard and found them there. I thought you deserved the choice of how to meet that. The choice. She turned the word over in her mind. In 4 years, she had not been given many choices. She had been given instructions and conditions, and the implicit understanding that the alternative to accepting both was worse than accepting them. She had built a life in the narrow space those conditions allowed. A life made of useful work and careful silence, and the particular discipline of a woman who had learned to take up as little room as possible in order to avoid reminding anyone that she was there. She thought about the eastern ridge in winter, the way the pine trees held their snow in long white arms until the weight became too much and it fell all at once. She had always thought of that as a kind of relief, the letting go after the long holding. She had never been sure whether she envied the trees or pitied them. If I don't go back with him now, she said slowly, I have nothing to go back to. Whatever arrangement existed with Elder Davin, Haedric will dissolve it. Yes, Tristan said. He will. She waited for the rest. The offer that came wrapped in conditions. The shelter extended in exchange for something else. She had learned to wait for that part. He said nothing else. She looked at him. That's it? I told you that you had a choice, he said. I did not say I would make it simple. Choices rarely are. She laughed, short, involuntary, almost startled out of her. It was not a happy sound, but it was a real one, and something shifted in his expression when he heard it, something brief and warm that came and went before she could name it. Behind her, Soren had gone diplomatically quiet. She looked out the window one more time at the white courtyard. She thought about the curtain, the cold, the careful daily work of being invisible. She thought about her own hand, always pressing the fabric flat, always hiding the thing beneath. She thought about the way Tristan Kael had looked at her in the great hall yesterday, not with pity, not with appetite, but with the simple, serious attention of someone who had seen something true and did not intend to look away from it. Tell Haedric, she said at last, that I will return to Ashvin when I am ready. Tristan nodded, exactly once. And Cora. She turned to look at him. His voice was the same as always, quiet, level. Containing depths, she was only beginning to understand. The Eastern Ridge Report. I would like to walk that boundary before the next thaw. With someone who knows it. She held his gaze. The ice sets unpredictably in the second month, she said. You would need to go before then. Then we go before then. The second month came early that year. Cora knew it by the particular quality of the cold. The way it stopped being simply cold and became something denser, more deliberate, pressing down on the ridge like a hand rather than a season. She had lived through 7 of these winters and had learned to read them the way a sailor reads water. Not by single signs, but by the accumulation of small details, each one insufficient alone, together telling a story that was impossible to ignore. She told Tristan on the 4th morning after Hadrick's departure. He had left Stonvale 2 days after his arrival, without Cora, and without the satisfaction of having accomplished what he had come for. Tristan had spoken to him privately in the study. She did not know what was said. And Hadrick had emerged from that meeting wearing an expression she recognized. The controlled blankness of a man who has been told something he cannot immediately refute, but intends to revisit the moment circumstances allow. He had looked at her once across the courtyard as his horse was brought around, and the note-making quality was still there in his eyes, patient and cold as the ridge ice itself. She had watched him ride out and told herself she would deal with that problem when it arrived. She had some practice at that. In the days between his leaving and the second month's early arrival, she had settled into Stonevale with the cautious, provisional quality of someone camping in a borrowed space. Grateful for the warmth, unwilling to believe in its permanence, she continued her work because she did not know how not to. Marin had found her in the records room on the second morning going through the eastern boundary correspondence from the past three seasons, comparing it against her own notes from the ridge walks, and had stood in the doorway for a moment with an expression that was not quite surprise. "You don't stop," Marin observed. "The work doesn't stop," Cora said, without looking up. "There's a difference," Marin said, but she had brought tea and left without pressing the point. And Cora had drunk the tea and continued working. And somewhere in that quiet exchange, something had eased between them that had not been tense exactly, but had not been easy either. Soren she understood better by the third day. He was a skeptic by nature. She could see it in the way he watched everything, cataloged it, filed it away before committing to a response. He had not trusted her immediately upon hearing her name. He had not trusted the reports, or Tristan's response to them, or the situation in general. And Cora respected this about him, in the way she respected all things that were honest about their own nature. He came to her on the third afternoon with a map of the eastern boundary spread under his arm, and a list of specific technical questions about the ridge terrain, and she answered all of them with precision. And when she finished, he rolled the map back up and said, "You have better instincts for defensive positioning than half my scouts." "I've been walking that ground for 4 years," she said. "I know," he said. "That's what I mean." It was not quite an apology. It was not quite not one. She accepted it for what it was. On the fourth morning, she went to find Tristan. He was in his study, the room she had glimpsed through the open door the first afternoon, with its walls of shelved maps and stacked correspondence, and the broad oak desk beneath the high window that looked north toward the ridge. He was standing at the desk with a quill in his hand, and ink on the edge of his thumb, frowning at a document in a way that suggested the document had said something he disagreed with. He looked up when she knocked on the open door. "The ice is setting early," she said. "If we're going to walk the eastern boundary, we need to go within the next 3 days. After that, the north face of the ridge will be impassable until spring." He set down the quill. 3 days. 2 would be better. He looked at her for a moment with that particular quality of attention, the thorough, unhurried kind, and she held it this time without looking away. She had been practicing that, without quite meaning to. "Tomorrow," he said, "dawn." She nodded and turned to leave. "Cora." She stopped. "The report Bryn's account aligns with," he said carefully, "the injury 2 winters ago. I have not pressed you on it because it is yours to speak or not speak, but I want you to know that if there is anything in Ashven that constitutes a danger to you, documented danger, the kind that can be addressed through council authority, I would like to know about it." She stood with her back to him and her hand resting against the door frame, and the cold stone under her fingers was solid and real. And she thought about 4 years of careful silence and the cost of it. The daily, incremental cost that she had been paying so long she had almost stopped noticing the deductions. "It was Heydrick," she said. The words were quiet. Entirely quiet. The quietest she had perhaps ever said anything. 2 winters ago. He had been drinking. I was in the corridor at the wrong time. A pause. It had happened before. Less severely. The silence behind her was absolute. "Elder Davin did not know," she continued, because she had started, and the only way through was forward. Or perhaps he knew and found it easier not to examine closely. "He is not a cruel man. He is an old man who depends on his son, and did not wish to see what his son was." She heard Tristan set something down on the desk with great deliberateness. "How many times?" he said. She pressed her hand flat against the doorframe. "I stopped counting." The silence stretched. Then, thank you for telling me. Not, I'm sorry. Not the hollow symmetry of pity. Just, thank you. For trusting him with something that cost her to say. She turned and looked at him, and his face was the most controlled she had seen it. Every line of it held still with the conscious effort of a man who was feeling something significant and had decided that imposing it on her would not serve her. But his eyes were not controlled at all. They rode out the next morning before the light had fully come. Soren had wanted to send 6 armed riders. Tristan had agreed to 4. Cora had said 2 was sufficient for the terrain, and had been overruled on this with a firmness that surprised her until she realized it was not distrust of her judgment, but something else entirely. Something that had nothing to do with the ridge and everything to do with Hedrick's patient. Cold eyes as his horse had carried him out of the courtyard. The eastern ridge in pre-dawn was a world made entirely of blue and white and silence. The pine trees stood enormous and still on either side of the track. Their branches bent low under accumulated snow, releasing small white cascades when the wind moved through them. The horse's breath came in long white plumes, and their hooves were muffled against the packed snow of the path, and the only sounds were the creak of leather and the occasional distant call of a winter bird, somewhere high in the trees. Cora rode slightly ahead, because she knew the path, and because riding ahead made the explaining easier. She could point to what she meant rather than describe it. She showed them the first incursion marker at a split in the pine line, a series of scored cuts in the bark of 3 consecutive trees that were too regular to be animal damage. She showed them the packed down area at the ridge's first shoulder, where snow had been disturbed and resettled in ways that suggested repeated overnight encampments. She showed them the narrowing of the eastern path where the ridge dropped sharply to the left, and the snow concealed a ledge of loose shale that could take a horse's leg if you did not know to steer wide. Tristan listened to all of it without interrupting. He dismounted where she dismounted, walked where she walked, crouched beside the scored trees, and looked at the marks with the focused attention of a man absorbing information he intended to act on. His 4 riders kept a respectful distance without being asked. It was at the ridge's second shoulder, perhaps 2 hours out from Stonevale, that she stopped. The tree line broke here, and the land opened into a narrow plateau before the ridge dropped again toward the valley. On clear days, you could see the full sweep of the eastern boundary from this point. 3 settlements. The distant glint of the river. The dark smudge of the far forest. Today the sky was iron gray, and the visibility was limited, but still sufficient to see the valley floor below, and what was on it. Riders. 8 of them. Perhaps more. Moving along the valley track with the deliberate, unhurried pace of people who believed they were unobserved. Not Ashven riders. The colors were wrong. Cora felt, rather than heard, Tristan come to stand beside her. He was looking at the valley, and his expression had shifted into something sharp and operational. "That's the Dravain insignia," he said very quietly. "Dravain." She turned the word over. She had seen that name in correspondence, buried in the older records she had been reviewing. A pack from the far eastern territories, nominally allied to the crown. "They have no business on that road." "No," Tristan said. "They don't." One of his riders had already pulled back to send word. The others moved instinctively into the tree line, hands at weapons, eyes on the valley floor. And then Cora saw something that stopped her breath entirely. Among the riders below, wearing the dark blue cloak of Ashven's acting pack leader, broad-shouldered and unmistakable even at distance, Hedrick. Riding at the center of the Dravain group. Not a chance encounter. Not a coincidence of roads. He was positioned at the center. He was gesturing. He was talking to the man at the front of the column as someone talks to a partner, not a stranger. Cora thought about the note-making expression, the patience in his eyes, the way he had looked at her in the courtyard, not with frustration, but with the settled certainty of a man who had a plan and was not particularly troubled by setbacks. She thought about 4 years of reports being sent under another name. 4 years of information about the Eastern Ridge. Patrol routes, timing, terrain, vulnerability. flowing outward from Ashven and documents she herself had written. The cold came up through the ground and into her feet, and she gripped her horse's rein very tightly and said, in a voice she barely recognized, "He knew what I was documenting." Tristan was already looking at her. "The incursion flags," she said. "I flagged movement along the eastern ridge in 2 consecutive seasons. I documented the specific patrol gaps, timing, location, snow conditions that would make the ledge passable." Her voice was steady. She was not sure how. "He never forwarded those flags to the council. He suppressed them. And if he is meeting with Dravain riders on the eastern road..." "He was selling them," Tristan said. His voice was very quiet. "The information, the gaps. The wind moved through the pine trees and shed its white freight in slow cascades. Below them, in the valley, Hadrick and the Dravain riders continued their unhurried conversation, and the gray sky pressed down, and Cora understood at last what her years of careful, invisible work had been used for, and who had been using it. The anger that moved through her then was the cleanest thing she had felt in years.